Hello darling angels, welcome back to Fluid, a podcast series where we explore queerness in its entirety and the lost connections between all of us, queer or not. How are we all doing out there? It's spring. Honestly, I feel like, because obviously this is a bi-weekly podcast, I circle back around to recording these episodes, and honestly, I just feel like life at the moment is a trip. Every moment I feel like I'm having these profound realizations about myself, about what I want out of life, about so many things, and you know, I'm very grateful for that, and it's just intense. Is anybody out? Well, the thing is, I don't want to ask redundant questions because I know this is strange, and I know we're all, you know, the longevity of life right now is kind of kicking in. So that's intense. But it's also showing me what I really want out of life in quite a kind of fundamental way. And so I'm really grateful for that. And it's, you know, circling back round to this place, recording this series and really tapping back into what's important to me. You know, wanting to make genuine, authentic connections with people that are listening. Okay? Oh, amazing. So what we're going to be talking about today, if you haven't seen from the title, is sober queer spaces. Now, while there are specifically sober nightlife spaces, I'm not going to be addressing those spaces directly today, and we're going to be casting our net a little bit further and just talking about many more spaces that are conducive for us to be grounded and present in our bodies and in the moment without necessarily needing drugs or alcohol to enjoy it. So with that being said, we're going to introduce someone called Ndella, who was so kind enough to contribute a voice note of what a sober space means to them.
I moved out of London last summer during the pandemic to Oxford, where I can really easily access wild swimming spots. And I found a safe space in the water. I completely fell in love with this secluded little pool. The coldness of the water just invigorates my body, and I get that reset in my brain, that adrenaline rush of jolting yourself into a different vibration, which is something I really miss about drugs and alcohol, admittedly, and have struggled to find replacements for in the past 2 years of being mostly sober. Any feelings of dysphoria kind of leave me. I feel at peace with my identity because I can physically feel my existence as part of nature. Safety and safe space is not something I've felt a lot of in my life, but looking back, I realise I've always found these moments of safety and brief interactions with the natural world, even as a kid. And I think what it's given me is the realization that I don't need substances to feel that energy. And in fact, I wouldn't be able to feel these experiences with anything but a clear and sober mind and body. For me, gender fluidity can be a real minefield of negative self-talk where I'm constantly questioning my validity. Like, am I an abomination? Is there something wrong with me? Like, how do I fit into the world when nothing fits me? But these spaces remind me that, like, I am valid and real because I am unquestionably a part of nature.
How beautiful and how profound, really. And so that brings us to our guest for this episode, who is an incredible, sensational person, Kay Bailey Obazi, who is the creator of storytelling platform Prim Black and Ocker, the Queer Black Book Club. Now, I should say that Ocker and Prim Black, you know, when they do live events, aren't specifically sober spaces, but they're very conducive to people being sober. Thank you for joining us, Kay.
Hey, thank you very much for having me.
So for any listeners who haven't heard of Prim Black and Ocker, can you just tell us a little bit about these platforms?
So Prim is ultimately a space where stories by people of Black ancestry exists. The whole point is to platform their stories, and we focus on those who are of African heritage, Caribbean heritage, or Afro-Latinx. And there's more beyond that, but those are like the three core focal points that we can discern that majority of people of Black ancestry come from as like an origin. And the purpose of it really is to just provide, create a space where all the mediums that we use to tell stories are available and accessible. So on the platform, you will find written content, audio content, visual content in terms of paintings, photography, documentary, film, music videos, and yeah, just all in one space. And the whole point of it is that we can, for one, platform more Black British voices, more queer voices, and also create a space where anyone can engage in storytellers of Black ancestry. So that's Prim in a nutshell. And then Okka is our book club. So that focuses exclusively on written content. The purpose of that is very similar in terms of platforming people of Black ancestry, but it's also about creating a space where people get to know more authors of Black ancestry. I feel like we are often just fed the core 10 or 12 that have made it really big, and like, to their credit, they are leaders, but we also have, you know, an innumerable amount of people who are not necessarily well known, not necessarily mainstream, but have also created incredible work. And through Okka, that also brought us to creating our author's catalogue. And the author's catalogue is literally just a crazy library of every single author we could find from every country where Black people exist. And yeah, you can just go on there, pick a name, pick a book, and go and find it. So yeah.
Awesome. I mean, like, what I really wanted to ask as well is how kind of Okka came into being in its own entity, and why the kind of element of storytelling is of such importance.
So I think for me, I've always loved reading. I've always loved reading books. And when I first kind of came into reading, and to be fair, that was when I was like, honestly, like whilst I was in secondary school, so that sort of 14, 15 year old, but I'd always read books by people like, I don't know, the Bronte sisters and Jacqueline Wilson and Ian McEwan, if you know that book, Atonement. Honestly, still my favorite book. But it, again, you know, it really just focuses on the perspective of whiteness. You know, it comes from a space that, whether intentional or not intentional, it still centers white people and the experience of people who are white, you know, European, you know, wherever they might be from. And it was when I got to uni that I really first started reading works by people of Black ancestry, and particularly reading a book called by Chimamanda Adichie, actually, called Half a Yellow Sun. And that focused on Nigeria, and it focused on the Biafran War in Nigeria in like the 1960s, the late 1960s, just post Nigeria's independence. And it was just so crazy to really read a book and feel like I could really recognize myself. I could really place myself in that story as a Black person, as a Nigerian person, and understand some of the dialectal tones, some of the colloquialisms, some of the like broken English, and like see that written down. And it just connected with me so much. And from that moment, I just continued to just read works by people of Black ancestry. So African-American authors, African authors, Caribbean authors. And it just kept opening up more understanding of myself, of my history as a Black person, and also of the shared experience that, you know, even as a British born Black person, that really understanding what race relations were and what, you know, subjugation was and what we have faced as Black people. And also within those stories, you know, there's a lot of happiness, there's a lot of joy, there's like loads of stories that are super humorous, that are just funny and that are just fun. And it wasn't all just about trauma and about what we've been through, but it's also about how we come through it and how we live our daily lives. And the more you talk to people, you realize that there's so many people that haven't read these books or haven't seen themselves in books. And I just kind of got very tired as well of like Black History Month, for example. They love to just give you the same set of Black authors, and like I said, to their credit, but they're not all we have and they're not all we should have. And if we keep talking about Baldwin, who literally is honestly no longer here and no longer writing, what about the people that are creating right now? Like, what about the person who's released a book last year or the year before? Like, are those stories not as important? So I was just like, you know what, like, let me just begin this book club. And the other part of the book club is a queer space. There are loads of Black book clubs, loads of them. You've got Black Girls Book Club, Black Women's Book Club. There's loads of book clubs, but there are not any book clubs that specifically center queer Black people, and also queer Black British people. And that is really what Ochre is about. It's about focusing on queerness, on Blackness, that intersection, on trans people, on non-binary people, and on creating a space for community that doesn't just exist in the club. It's a very long answer, but like, yeah, but you know, often in the queer community, we are just seeing each other in party environments, you know, alcohol-induced spaces, fun spaces that do allow you to connect, and you can create so many amazing and beautiful relationships. I have definitely met some of my best friends up in the club, but but it can't be all that we have, because that's not the only way that we exist. You know, we all have moments of relaxation, of downtime, of exploration, and that exists outside of the club too. So what is that space? And Ochre wants to be that space. You know, we want to create room for us to engage in other ways as a Black community.
So we're just going to hop out here really quick, and I'm going to introduce you to a friend, Kinza. Now, she sent me a voice note about the importance of sober queer spaces, not necessarily with the intention of being in the podcast, but I just thought it so hits the nail on the head. So let's hear it from her real quick.
We get lost in the source of being so serious because this way of life is like constantly under attack. And these sober queer spaces are genuinely like that calm, that eye of the storm, where you can just think. You just need a place to think. And I just think that's beautiful. Oh, and like another big thing is, it's for the babies, like the baby queers who aren't, they're not even 18. They're not ready for that wild, free, like queer nightlife. They need nurturing. They need the nurturing that we didn't get for like a huge myriad of generational reasons that make me really fucking depressed when I think about it. And you need to have a place to grow. And that's why I think sober spaces are, if not more, important.
Thank you, Kinza. Now let's jump back in with Kay.
Before the pandemic, Ochre held live book readings. Yeah, so you held these like live book readings and book clubs. How did this feel for you? What was the energy in the room like?
You know what? I really miss it. You know, I miss it almost as much as I miss being in the club. I miss it because I just met other queers, you know, there's a whole series of gays in the city, and I felt like I was meeting more and more people. But yeah, it was incredible. I think it was very much a space, and we did a survey recently and had like a whole bunch of testimonials. And sometimes, you know, when you create something or you create a space, or, you know, you don't realize how significant it is for people. Like, I will know how it feels to me, and my friends will tell me how it feels to them. But when someone who I don't know speaks about, you know, what they gained from coming to an Ochre, what they gained from just seeing it existing, it really, really warms my heart. And it really shows that, like, we're doing something good here. We're doing something that's really powerful and has an impact that, you know, is not entirely a part of the agenda, but is absolutely a part of the agenda, because I'm not doing this so that it can be recognized. I'm doing it so that people can have a space and they can take from it what they will. But yeah, I mean, it was always just one of just, you know, harmony and one of friendliness and friendship and community. And it allowed you to be free as a Black queer person, talking about books and really trying to break away from, you know, people have a lot of strange, and I call it strange because I don't understand it, thoughts and feelings about queer life, about queer people, and about this idea of like wearing your queerness on your sleeve. It's like, I remember someone said to me that I understand the book club part, I don't understand the queer part. And my answer was, because it's not for you. So whether you understand it is actually something that I really don't care about. So, but you know, it's things like that, you know, and you get that in most things. Like people will say that about, you know, an all women's book club or about an all Black book club or any space that seems to really center a specific community is somehow like, but why? It's required. That's it. You know, we need to have a space that we call ourselves, and we need to have a space where we can feel entirely free and feel like we can be authentic. So that's really what Okka was like. And the very last one that we had was just incredible. You know, for a book club to have like 40, 50 people, it's absurd because it's like, at that point, is it a book club? Yes, because it's great still, but it's a lot of people. And you'd have half the room have read the book and half the room have not. And then you really realize that part of the reason why these people are coming is whilst it does center books, it's just the space. It's being around people that you see yourself in. And that's what's important. And to make sure that we could bring those people in who didn't read or didn't like to read or find it hard to read, you know, we always had an exhibition and always had a panel discussion or Q&A or screening, because that's just another way to ensure that you're being as inclusive as possible.
Yes, smashing. Mm-hmm. Thank you. I mean, like, you literally robbed me of my questions, but I live for it. And like, honestly,
I'm aware, I can talk whatever, you have to stop me.
I think what you spoke about like space, and I think it's interesting, like the kind of word space or conversations around spaces can kind of often, I feel, be misinterpreted as these kind of slightly vague and slightly kind of snowflakey thing, you know, of like, I don't know, some people just turn their nose up at it a bit, but yeah. I think you hit the nail on the head. It's like, if you don't kind of get it, then this isn't for you. Because I think when you felt that safety and electricity, just like a euphoria that can't be mistaken.
At all.
It's, you know, it's also the sober spaces where you're like often fully present and you're kind of like really in your body and in your mind. And I know we've kind of like spoken about this a bit, and I know that Okka is not necessarily like a sober space, but you know, more conducive for sober people to be in. Like, what do you think this is necessary and important?
Yeah, I mean, I think one, I didn't necessarily call Okka a sober space, but over time people started referring to it as a sober space. Because there was never this insistence on drinking. And some of the spaces that we in had a bar, maybe didn't have a bar, but drinking was like the furthest thing from my mind. And I think for most people, it's very much optional. But I think the difficulty for people who are actively trying to remain sober is if you are in a space where everyone is actively trying to not be sober, then it's a big battle for you. And I think the beautiful thing about sober spaces or spaces that don't create this sense of, you know, being inebriated or and equate that to having a good time, it means that there isn't that pressure. There isn't that sense of like, oh, but I need to drink in order to enjoy this, or I need to do whatever in order to enjoy this. You can just be present in that space and feel comfortable that majority of the people in there are not drinking. Majority of the people in there are not necessarily doing anything else other than existing and enjoying that space in their full self. And I think it's quite nice. It's quite nice to not feel that pressure to engage in something that you might struggle with. And I think it's really important, especially for the queer community, especially for the Black community, just for anyone really, because it can be a real coping mechanism, and you don't realize that you're coping until it's a bit, you know, too far. So yeah, I mean, I think that they're really vital, but more than anything, I just feel like we need to have both. Like, you need to have 2, 7, 20 of everything so that people can really choose, because when the pool is small and the pool is sparse, then that's really where the difficulty is. And it's not fair. You know, all these heteros, they've got a hell of a lot to choose from.
So, yeah, so what are kind of your future aspirations for Okka?
At the moment, I want it to just continue to be something that's really strong, you know, and a real sort of pillar in the community. I want it to be something that really creates a space for people to read, to learn about authors, to learn about books. It really warms my heart when people are just like, I'd never heard of this book until Okka. It's like, yeah, me too. So, and I think, you know, long term, even for Prim, I want us to be able to start to publish works, you know, particularly by people of Black ancestry. I want us to be, you know, leading in publicizing books and providing reviews and really creating a space that, you know, Okka doesn't have to just exist in London. Like, we can have people, especially because it's in person, we can have people in Sheffield who run a book club. And it doesn't have to be called Okka. It could just be another queer and Black book club. Like, I'm not trying to be a franchise or anything like that. I think the main thing for me is that it just creates room for more. It creates more to be, like, repeated and duplicated, and more space for queer and Black people to feel like they are well-read or they are knowledgeable, and that if they want to write, that they can write and people are going to read it or listen to it. And also just a place for us to just grow the story of us, because that's the ultimate goal. It's to make sure that people know who we are, and feel, you know, that we're not voiceless, and that we do exist, and we exist hella loud, you know. Word to Tanya Campos.
Okay, I'm going to finish off. And the last question I want to ask you, if someone was like, here's a time machine, you can go back and you can kind of go to yourself maybe 12, 13 years old. What do you think you would love to say to that little baby kid?
Oh my God, I was one of the boldest 12-year-olds ever. So what would I really say? I would say, like, to myself, like, it's okay to go your own way. I think, especially when you're younger, you feel almost like it's impossible to go against the grain or to do your own thing. Like, if you're obsessive about comics, be obsessive about it. If you are obsessive about anything, if there's anything that you really love and truly like to do, regardless of whether people think it's fun, cool, or interesting or not, there will absolutely be scores of people that are, like, on your level or on the same page. And so it's okay. And also, don't be afraid to ditch friends, because you'll probably won't be around them in 10 years anyway. So
what an absolute legend. But yeah, so thank you to Kay for coming on and joining us for this episode. You can find Prim Black on Instagram at prim.black, and you can find Okka's bits and bobs through that page too. Definitely check out the website as well. Also, stay locked on my Instagram, because Kay did a little poetry kind of like letter to oneself reading, that was beautiful. So you can find that on Fleur Podcast on Instagram. I'm honestly, it's so warm. The sun's really come out for the last couple episodes for me for recording, and it's just a treat. Right, loves, I am sending lots of love to you. You know where you can find me at this point. You can email me, I want to say as well. The only thing I could find was podcast fluid, which sounds a bit weird actually. But let's go with that. We went with that. podcastfluid@gmail.com if you want to talk to me via email, because social media is a bit much sometimes. See you in 2 weeks.